enjoying finger food, signing up to perform if you're brave, just one song or more than one, or just coming to listen. And I heard there might be a preview of Zeke and Jack's music that night. So you can talk to me or Doug or email us, and there's a sign-up sheet in the social hall on the bulletin board. Hope to see you there. Thanks.
To tell you guys that there's going to be a peanut butter drive for the Hunger Task Force on March 13th. So if you want to bring as much peanut butter as you can to help the people who don't have much food, so yeah. Okay.
Thank you. And I just have a couple of more announcements. If you signed up for the pasta party at the silent auction, this is a reminder that it will be on March 19, starting at 6 p.m. If you didn't sign up but want to get in on this, we've still got spaces. $10 a seat. Barb Adams and I are catering the food. It's going to be amazing. Come on down. Join us. It's going to be a great evening. See me if you want to get in on this. We also have a reminder that March 20th will be our 10th anniversary in this building. Come prepared to celebrate that day. It's going to be a fun service. And according to a rumor from Jerry and Esther, there will be cake involved. So please come to that one. Last announcement, we kicked off the beer and UU history on Friday, and we had a lot of fun with it. We are going to cancel this Friday's service because it conflicts with TED Talks. So we will cancel the beer and Bible this Friday so it doesn't conflict with TED Talks. We're going to begin again the next Friday on the 18th. We're up to 1553, so come and hear about martyrdom and how we became the modern church that we are. On the 18th. This house has many rooms. Rooms for those who look for the truth. Rooms for those who think they found it. Rooms who aren't sure that there is any truth at all. rooms for the lost and rooms for the found and rooms for those who aren't sure why they're here. So welcome as you stop today on your travels. Welcome if you meant to be here or if you wandered in not knowing why you came. Come and let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to the people around you.
We light this chalice in honor of our many journeys. May it light our way to places we can call home. Thanks, Zeke. Please rise in body or spirit and join us in singing our opening hymn, number 16. 'Tis a gift to be simple. We'll sing it through twice. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Christy Bowden, and I'm glad to be the worship associate this morning. LCUUC is a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, which means we welcome and affirm you and all people, regardless of who you love or how you live. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. We welcome those who have known nothing but acceptance in your lives and those who have known the pain of exclusion and suffered disdain for your differences. In today's order of service, you'll find information about LCUUC and ways to be involved. Please join us for refreshments and conversation after today's service, and while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about us. You can also check us out online at lcuuc.org or on Facebook. Please take a moment to silence your electronics now. And again, welcome. We are so very pleased you've chosen to worship here with us today.
One of the ways that we take care of our community is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items that we donate each month. So if you've brought a food item to share, please bring it forward or ask a child to bring it forward for you. And I'd like to ask all the children to come up front for a story. So we're talking today about things that we can teach each other and learn from each other. And today's story is from a book called Buddhist Animal Wisdom Stories, and it was put together by Mark McGinnis. And Mark did not write these. He collected these. These are very, very old stories. And we're going to read the story today about the buffalo and the monkey. And this is a buffalo. And that is the monkey. Does anybody know how big a buffalo is? What do you think? How tall do you think his back is? What do you think? Big. That's a good answer. A buffalo, when he's standing up, the top of his back would be about as tall as the top of my head. These are big. 2,000 pounds. And they look just like that. And when they walk, the ground rumbles because it's boom, 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 boom. They usually don't move really fast because they're so big and they don't like to squash things. So when they walk, you hear each footfall. Boom, 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 boom. Now, how big is a monkey? Fairly small. What do you think? About a foot long. And the monkeys in India are pretty much exactly that. From the top of their head to the bottom of their butt, they're about a foot long, with another foot of legs stuck in there. So all told, the monkey's right about the size of you guys over here. So how do you think you'd compare to the size of a buffalo? You think you could bother a buffalo much? Okay, well, let's hear our story. A long time ago in a beautiful forest in India, there was a mighty, mighty buffalo. He was one of the biggest of all buffaloes that ever were. His muscles were like this. He looked like a big, dark, blue-gray mountain moving through the forest. Can you imagine him? Think about what he would look like. 2,000 pounds walking. The lions and tigers all got out of his way because he was so big. What do you think the lions said when they saw him? What do you say? Roar! And they'd run away. That's a good one, too. The lions got out of his way. The tigers ran when they saw him because they knew he could just step on them. But the buffalo was actually pretty nice. He was the most gentle buffalo ever. And he was very, very smart. But one day, a monkey realized how nice the buffalo was. And he decided he was going to aggravate him. What do you think the monkey did? Whenever the monkey... Go ahead. The monkey would dance. Good one. Whenever the monkey would see him, he would run up to him and jump on his back. And when he got up on his back, he would do a monkey dance. And he'd make monkey noises. Just like that. And then he would ride him like a horse, or he would get up between his horns and he would swing back and forth. And there would be the poor, poor buffalo walking through the forest with his monkey swinging from his horns. But the monkey found out the buffalo would put up with him no matter what he did. Then he got mean. He would stand in front of the buffalo when the buffalo was trying to eat grass. And every time the buffalo would go to take a bite, the monkey would go, nope. And the buffalo would go over here to take a bite, and the monkey would go, nope. And he'd get under him again. The buffalo would just shake his head and walk away till eventually the monkey gave up. And the buffalo didn't seem to mind a bit. The monkey thought it was funny. Every day he'd be on his back dancing and swinging and dodging and getting in front of him, and the buffalo would just go on. And the monkey started to spend all his time thinking up new ways to upset the buffalo. But there was an owl that lived in the woods, and he was up on the tree, and he would watch this every day. And he didn't get it. And so finally he said to the buffalo, "Buffalo, you scare the lions. You scare the tigers. But you let this monkey dance on you and keep you from eating. You could step on him and he would be monkey jelly. Why do you put up with this terrible monkey?" And the buffalo thought for a minute and he said, "Well, of course I could step on him. He's just a little tiny monkey. But why would I step on something so small and meaningless? It's not, doesn't bother me. It's easy to be patient and not step on people who are nice to you. Come on, when people are nice to you, what do you want to do? You want to talk to them? You want to play with them? It's easy to be nice to them. The challenge, the hard part, is being patient and tolerant with somebody dancing on you. He can't really hurt me. I'm too much bigger. He's just trying to bother me. But really, he's done me a favor because he's taught me how to be patient with somebody who's just trying to pester me. I've been working on developing patience and compassion for that monkey because, you know, he needs some compassion. He needs somebody to just understand him. Maybe he'll learn from my example how not to be such a jerk of a monkey. Maybe he won't. But it's not my job to step on him. He's not hurting me. We all need challenges from time to time to develop our good side. Think about it. If everything's always good in your life, you don't know what to do when something bad happens. So something a little annoying isn't that terrible. This monkey is letting me grow. The owl thought about it for a minute and he said, wow, you are really, really an impressive buffalo. Not just because you're so big and wise, but you're so nice. Thank you for teaching me this important lesson. And the owl waved to the buffalo and he flew back to the treetops. And the monkey wandered by and he stepped up on the buffalo and he started to dance. So don't let the monkeys in your life get to you. If it's not really hurting and not really bothering you, be like the buffalo. Sometimes it helps you to learn new stuff to have somebody aggravate you once in a while. And life's not always perfect. Thank you for listening to my story. If I could have my lantern bearer. And if you all would wait just a minute while we get this lit. May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. If you all would please follow Zeke as he leads you to your classroom, and if the rest of you would help me to sing the children out. Some words of sublime wisdom. If you can live without caffeine, if you can be cheerful ignoring aches and pains, if you can resist complaining, if you can understand when those around you are a little too busy, if you can take criticism and come back with a smile, if you can ignore a friend's limited education without correction, if you can resist treating a rich friend better than a poor one, if you can face the world without deceit, if you can conquer tension and relax without liquor or interesting drugs, you can honestly say that deep in your heart you have no prejudice against creed or color, religion, gender, or politics, then congratulations, my dear friend, you have reached the same level of spiritual development as the average dog. Thank you. To help support these and other gems of spiritual wisdom, the morning offering will now be given and received. Thank you so much for your gifts, which support the life and the work of this community. As a congregation, one of the really joyous things we get to do together is to welcome new members into our midst. Our path to membership is simple. You attend until you think you might want to go further. Then you make a decision to come to an orientation meeting. You find out about our denomination and our faith as a whole, and this church in particular. And once you're sure that this place is right for you, you make a financial pledge and you sign the book, officially joining our congregation. Today we are pleased to welcome and recognize two of our newest members. Al Haskell is on the membership committee, and I'd like to ask him to join me up here as we begin our new member welcome. Come on in.
Al's in charge of the membership.
So I'm trying to be the water buffalo, but obviously there's still a little more inmates. Should I come over here?
Yes, that's not Mike.
Sorry, Al, we didn't know there was another announcement.
Turn it on.
There.
That's okay. We're fine.
No, that mic's not working.
So we are looking for volunteers for the sound committee. So just a couple of quick thoughts. Personally, I get teary and joyful and emotionally. It's tough for me. It's a joyous thing for me when people join. But it brings joy, and it sometimes joy brings tears to me. So glad to have new people joining us and making us stronger. And the few times that I've been able to spend with Anita and Steve, I guess based upon the theme of the child story, look at them as buffaloes. Although there's a little monkey in the male member there. So that said, we become stronger and more diverse as we grow, and very pleased to have you guys joining us today. So let's see. Am I to read this part here?
So Anita and Steve, if you could please join us up here.
We keep changing this. So, Anita and Steve Martin, you've completed all of the steps to membership and are ready to be recognized as a member of this congregation. If you would, please read the first section on your sheet in unison and remind us of why you've come here.
We come from different backgrounds with differing points of view, but we share a common journey. We are here to seek deeper meaning and value in our human struggles, to grow in understanding and to be more understood,
to celebrate
our joys and sorrows in community, and to be reminded that we are all strands in a connected web of life.
Now, Al is going to give you each a candle. And we light our candles from one chalice because we share together one fire. This is a church where all may find faith as they define it. Faith in themselves, faith in the goodness of life, faith in the ultimate as they can conceive of it. So for you in the congregation, the words are in your order of service. Would you please read with me now the first section on your sheet, which begins, "This is a house." This is a house of love, hope, freedom, and faith. We and those who came before us have built a house where all are free to seek truth and knowledge with open minds and open hearts. It is a house of worship and peace, of art and music and meditation and nature. It is a congregation of adults and children, of action and rest. It is a place of trust where we covenant with each other for fellowship and a common good. It is a house of friendship where personal dignity and worth are protected. It is a house of prophecy, calling on all to seek justice and spiritual maturity.
In this, our community, hope is made real through the work of human hands and human hearts.
In this community, love is made visible while we support one another in the search for truth and meaning. Our living tradition draws from many sources, both sacred and secular, and we foster the use of reason, conscience, and direct experience. If you indeed wish to be part of the congregation, please read aloud together the second section on your sheet now.
We do wish to be a part of this congregation. We wish to join you in seeking personal truth and meaning, providing community, working for a more equitable and just world, and growing in spiritual maturity.
And would the congregation please join me in welcoming our new members? If you would join me in reading aloud the second section on your sheet. Welcome to your church. Welcome to the workshop of our common dreams and the cradle for our shared endeavors. Welcome to this house. We rejoice that you are here.
And if you guys would like your candles, you can send them joining our shared flame.
Typical Unitarian candles. Can we get a round of applause for our newest members?
My hand representing everybody's hand. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much. And your candles and your bags are yours to keep. Thank you. This is the time in our service where we share together our joys and our concerns. Before the service, you're always welcome to silently light a candle at the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud together and we light candles together. So would anyone who has a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone. Please remember to hold the microphone tilted slightly up and directly in front of your mouth.
Hi, this is Matt. Candle of concern for Heidi and the kids. They went into urgent care this morning. They have bad colds with sore throats and coughs and all that good stuff. So,
hi, it's Barb. A candle of joy. My sister, who has been going through cancer treatments for second round of ovarian cancer, is she's doing radiation now. She played tennis yesterday.
This is Lynn, a candle of joy for Anita and Steve Martin, our newest members, and may they find this church to be a house of love, hope, freedom, and faith.
This is Claire, a candle of concern for a friend of mine, Rob Kellner. He and his mom had to put down their older dog on Friday, and it was time for her, but that was the last link between Rob's dad, who died of cancer 5 years ago, so he's also dealing with that.
This is Barbara. Could you please light a candle of concern for my youngest granddaughter, Maya? She's been having a continuous headache since December 6th. They've been to every doctor. They were at Children's, and nothing. I mean, her headaches are so bad. They go from 1 to 10. They go up to a 9 so often, and she can't function. She's not going to school most of the time. And also, if anybody has any suggestions, I'll be so happy to hear them. Thank you.
Hi, this is Terry. Tony and I have been gone for a month. We've been helping my parents and vacationing a little. And those of you who follow Facebook have seen this miraculous thing that's happened to my mother. So she's 90 years old. She just had her second hip replacement, and 4 days after the second hip replacement, she's walking with a cane, and she has not walked unassisted without a walker for about 2.5 years. She's had severe pain, and the pain is gone. I mean, this is like going to start a whole new life for her that she thought she would never have. We're both very happy for her.
I'm Sarah Hudson, and Bud, I'll speak for Bud. We are truly surprised and joyous that our longtime friends have joined the church, and it was a surprise to us this morning, so it's wonderful. We've been connected since, before 1980 with our church in Waukesha, and then going to many other Unitarian churches and meditation classes, and this is just very special today, so thanks.
My name is Bud, and I would like to confirm what Sarah said. But also, I would like to thank Amy for the wonderful children's story. It will be very hard to trump that one.
Please light a candle of concern for myself and my family. I found out about a week ago that I have breast cancer and will be having surgery in about a week and then about 5 months of chemo. So I know that that will rock my children's world. And so just thinking of them.
This is Sue. I want to proactively light a candle of joy for the opportunity to work with the fifth and sixth graders in the transitions program. I hope everybody can make the service next week. I won't be here, which is why I'm doing the proactive joy, but they are an amazing, amazing group of kids, and it has been a lot of fun getting to know them.
This is Al. First of all, I want to thank the Martins for their bravery, having gone through an orientation with me. But truly, if you would light a candle of hope and support. And John Kuhn's mom is going through the last stages of life. He just spent a week out with her in Nebraska. Some of us visited with he and Carol last night for a time and talent dinner, which was awesome. But energy and support and love out to John Kuhn and his family.
Hi, this is Carrie. I just want a quick candle of joy. I got to see a beloved member of our congregation, Terry Copeland, last week, who sends all her love and wishes, good wishes to everyone here.
And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those concerns which we hold so deeply, but which we have not spoken aloud here today.
Our first reading today is from Pop Buddhism, The New Myth in Popular Culture by Radhrani Dasgupta. Buddhist symbology has become part and parcel of an ultra-modern, kitschy culture. There are thousands of establishments which sell purportedly Buddhist products designed to help one lead a peaceful life. There are t-shirts designed by Buddhist punks. These have different images of Buddha or other Tibetan symbols like the mandala. There is a franchisee called Bodhicitta. The actual word Bodhicitta means to desire to attain Buddhahood. Another establishment sells mandala soaps. That Buddhist punk company goes by a tagline which says, "Entertain your mind and step into another dimension with this dramatically designed t-shirt." The ideals of simplicity seem long lost then. That mandala soap, by the way, costs $12. The point here is not to make value judgments as to whether and how Buddhist concepts are being commercially manipulated. What must be noted is the immense commercial viability of such products, which come for such exorbitant prices. Again, these are marketing tactics designed to cater to the craze for exotica. Those looking to be modern mystics can access a route to instant karma. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
Our second reading is from Buddhist Delight by James Atlas. Why was I in a tent in northern Vermont? Much less a tent in the woods at a Buddhist meditation center, reading Sakyong Mipham's Turning the Mind into an Ally by the light of my smartphone. If you really want to hear about it, to borrow a phrase from Holden Caulfield, I was on retreat. Perhaps I should say I was in retreat from a frenetic Manhattan life, hoping to find the balance and harmony that have formed the basis of the Buddhist tradition ever since Siddhartha Gautama discovered enlightenment about 2,500 years ago while sitting under a Bodhi tree in northern India. The fundamental insight of the Buddha, the awakened one, is this. Life consists of suffering, and suffering is caused by attachment to the self, which in turn attached to the things of this world. Only by liberating ourselves from the tyranny of perpetual wanting can we truly be free. Not that I'm ready to renounce this world or its things. I am still expecting something exciting, Edmund Wilson confided in his journal when he was in his 60s. Drinks, animated conversation, gaiety, an uninhibited exchange of ideas. So do I. But I need respite from those things too. Many converts are what Thomas A. Tweed in The American Encounter with Buddhism referred to as nightstand Buddhists. Mostly Catholics, Jews, yeah, I know, Judists, and refugees from other religions who keep a stack of Pema Chodron books beside their beds. So who are these, dare I coin the term, nudists? Burned out BlackBerry addicts attracted to its emphasis on quieting the monkey mind? Perhaps casual acolytes rattled by the fiscal and identity crises of a nation that even Jeb Bush suggests is in decline? Placard-carrying doomsayers out of a New Yorker cartoon. Uncertain times make us susceptible to collective catastrophic thinking, the conditions in which religious movements flourish. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 188. Come, come, whoever you are.
We're going to sing this as a round. So we'll start at the beginning, and then at some point I'll cue the... I guess let's start with the this side of the church, whether this is east or west or left or right, and then I'll cue the other side in for the second part of the round.
This was a challenging sermon for me, but as a minister, part of my mandate is not only to comfort the afflicted, but to afflict the comfortable. So if I afflict you today, please feel free to talk to me later. I don't think it's too bad, but Talking about Buddhism in a UU church is always a challenge. We like Buddhism as a group. Buddhism and UUism seem to go well together across our country. And more than that, Buddhism goes well with our whole culture right now. It's doggone popular. It predates Christianity. And yet, people claim that it is an elegant and perfect choice for the scientific and the thoughtful and the spiritual, but not religious. It's growing in the U.S., even as the mainline churches shrink. Right now in the U.S., if you were to guess how many Lutherans there were, there's a little under 3 million. There are 4 million stated Buddhists in the U.S., and growing. One survey found that about half of them have post-grad degrees. So they're very similar in makeup to what makes up our UU congregations. And there's a huge amount of overlap. The New York Times back in 2003 was very excited about the rapprochement between modern science and ancient Buddhist wisdom. And there have been an amazing number of conferences and books and articles on meditation and Zen in the brain and how cognitive theory works with Buddhist practice. So first of all, why do we like Buddhism so much? Why does it resonate when all around it are failing? At first glance, it may be because it seems like you get handed a fairly simple roadmap. Buddhism comes with directions. Not 10 commandments or 613 mitzvah. Not some god floating somewhere. But 4 noble truths, an eightfold path, and a variety of things that have spun off of that. It's like, oh my God, it's like science. There are numbered rules. I can do this. And there are things we know that don't require a lot of mysticism or supernatural belief. We're pretty sure that at some point between 564 BC and 400 BC, a person who became known as Siddhartha Gautama was born, taught, lived, and died on the Indian subcontinent. He became known as the Buddha, and the things he taught formed the foundation of what we know as Buddhism today. I will probably not only be the first, but the 57th to tell you I am not a Buddhist scholar, and I freely admit it. That is why I keep the blessed Eric Moraine around to correct me every time I really screw up. Or at least point me in the right direction. But the essential teachings of the Buddha are fairly straightforward. Siddhartha was born wealthy, lived wealthy, was a prince, married, had a son. And at 29, he left the world of wealth and privilege and went out to meet the actual subjects in his wider kingdom. For the first time, he saw old age, sickness, death, deprivation, all the things you would expect of a rich young man who had been protected his whole life. Like many young men, he reacted extremely. He became a wandering beggar. He studied yoga. He gave up his worldly possessions and nearly starved to death. And he decided that perhaps extremism wasn't such a fine idea after all. And that a middle way was a better choice. And he sat down under a tree to think about it. 49 days later, he had worked it out. He had reached enlightenment, a realization of why there was suffering and how to stop it. 4 fairly direct points. All life is transitory or temporary. All life is made up of conditional phenomenon, and so it is not satisfying. We boil this down to all life is suffering. We continually search for something outside ourselves to make us happy. But no matter how successful we are, we never remain satisfied. Craving for things causes suffering. Getting rid of suffering is putting an end to the craving and the clinging. And for the Buddha, this took you off the cycle of rebirth and dissatisfaction and dying over and over. Through diligent practice, you can end the hamster wheel chase after satisfaction. This is nirvana. And to top it off, he came up with a fourth truth, that there is an eightfold path that teaches you to do this, that you can work through to get there. You need to have a right view or right understanding of the nature of reality. You need to have the right intentions. You need to use speech compassionately. You need to behave ethically. You need to make a living ethically and non-harmfully. You need to cultivate wholesome qualities. You need whole mind and body awareness, and you need concentration, meditation, or some other dedicated practice. It's simple. The whole thing hangs together and it works. But let me add a codicil to that. It is a religious and spiritual set of practices. And various branches have broken off of it over the years. What Buddhism looks like in Tibet is not what Buddhism looks like in Japan versus what Buddhism looks like here. It's changed. But it must be practiced with intent and with deliberation. So those are the four noble truths. Now let's talk about the big lies. It's perfectly okay, lie number one, to appropriate parts of Buddhism because it's interesting and exotic and it sounds simple. It's perfectly okay to appropriate bits of this because it's become part of our culture. It's perfectly okay to appropriate it because it's just like UUism. For $40, you can get a 10 to Zen hoodie with the Eightfold Path on it, just in case you forget. For $187, you can buy a variety of Day Glow spiffy Buddha heads to match your decor. If your cheap Family Dollar has a whole series of stuff for $5 a piece, it's great. Nobody can read it because it's written in Chinese and Japanese characters, usually mixed and in the wrong order. But it's their Zen series. Looks quite nice. But just because you have the disposable cash to buy the lotus necklace and have a Buddha in the corner doesn't make you a Buddhist. Buddhism is more than meditating a lot and trying to figure out how in the world to pronounce namaste, 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 how to pronounce namaste correctly. There are people that are UU Buddhists, very reasonable. But it's not something you can rip apart and put back together randomly. You can't simply borrow whole chunks without any thought to the whole context they came out of. And Buddhism in and of itself is not either perfectly aligned or exactly what the pop cultural context would tell you it was. Borrow mindfully, understand and study the whole, engage in the practices as they were meant to be engaged in. Line number two, Buddhism doesn't require you to believe anything at all supernatural. Nothing. Philosopher Owen Flanagan said this too. In his Problem of the Soul, Buddhism rejects the theological impulse. Sounds good. It's not true, but it sounds good. Buddhism was born out of the Buddha's original Hindu religion. And like Hinduism, it accepts reincarnation and karma. But reincarnation implies something on a cosmic level. When we talk about reincarnation, we are talking about a system which says there is a natural moral balance between good and evil. That some things by nature are good and some things are bad, And something out there is making that judgment call. Did you ever think about who decides what's good and what's bad in the wheel of karma? Where's that decision coming from? What moral shape is being given to the universe and by what? There is no God, per se, in this scenario. But there is a cosmically determined good and bad, which your actions move you toward or away from. And something outside your human self is determining what is good and what is evil, and how much of these attributes your life possesses. So again, I'm not saying don't borrow and don't practice. I'm saying study, responsible search for truth and meaning. Lie number three, and I think I hate this one more than anything. Using Buddhist terminology makes you a Buddhist or is a spiritual practice. Our culture has become immersed in this. Words like karma and nirvana. Imaginary koans, like what is the sound of one hand clapping? And I bet every person in this room could have finished that sentence. They've become a part of commercial Buddhist culture. There's a motivational speaker named J.P. Sears who does some very funny and very poignant videos on the side. And he did one that's rather biting called How to Be Ultra Spiritual. It's funny. And it hurts. It hits close to home. He talks about throwing around words like energy and chi, nirvana and karma without having any idea what is meant by them and without actually experiencing these things or working with these things in your life. Don't be that guy. Most of us have met someone who will tell you in all earnestness, and unfortunately it's often a you-you, oh, I am so into energy work. And for those of you in this room who do serious work and study in that area, I'm sure you've hit it a time or two. I just love energy. I love chi. I love prana. It's all marvelous. What are they talking about? What do they even mean by that? Sears says, it's wonderful. You should put a big bandage your head and stick a flower in and make eye contact for way too long and have serious discussions using lots of Buddhist words and you will look ultra spiritual. As Unitarian Universalists, we commit ourselves to a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And these words have real meaning. So unless you have worked through what they mean for you, come up with a concept where these are integrated in your life, it is your responsibility not to simply borrow things because they sound neat. Lie number four, Buddhism is all about meditation, and meditation is good for everyone. Please reserve your bricks. Meditation alone does not make you a Buddhist. There are many styles, and we have many styles that we use within our church. They're all perfectly fine meditation styles. But meditation is not the perfect choice for everyone. Buddhist scholar Robert Thurman said, Buddhism is an inner science. He found it to be the practical approach to analyzing one's mind rather than a religious or spiritual practice. So for him, you try to reach a state of enlightenment or wisdom and balance, and you get there through meditation. But an actual neurologist and Zen Buddhist, James Austin, spent some time looking at the effects of meditation. And he found some interesting things. Absolutely, it reduces stress. Absolutely. But in every one of his groups, he found that the same results were achieved just by sitting quietly. There are different styles of meditation that work. If you find a style that works for you that is not Buddhist meditation, that's marvelous. That's great. Meditate any way that truly works for you. but don't claim belief or faith or participation in Buddhism if you are not engaging in any Buddhist practice other than meditation. Miguel Farias and Catherine Wilcombe said this in 2015 in the Washington Post. Meditation is presented as a technique that will have lots of positive effects and only positive effects. And it's easy to see why this myth is so widespread. After all, sitting in silence and focusing on your breathing or being aware of the flow of thoughts and feelings seems like a fairly innocuous activity. But considering that many of us rarely sit alone with our thoughts, it isn't hard to see how this might lead to difficult thoughts and emotions rising for some people, which we may or may not be equipped to deal with. They say, yet the potential for emotional and psychological disturbance is rarely talked about by meditation researchers, the media, or mentioned in training courses. Meditation works, but requires both support and some kind of framing, some kind of mindfulness. And just sitting mindfully on your mat does not make you a Buddhist. And this is the kicker. Buddhist meditation was not, emphatically not, designed as a tool to let us reach happiness. It's a way to change the perception of the world and to alter the sense of self with the goal of losing suffering, losing attachment. So for you youths who are trying to craft a spiritual practice or belief system with the goal of making them happy and fulfilled, borrowing pieces of Buddhism may seem to be a great fit, but it isn't about that. Buddhism says that the self, the part of you that is you, is unreal. It's an illusion. And part of the goal of enlightenment is to recognize that illusion and in doing so become more passionate and, yes, maybe more happy. But that's not the goal. Writer John Horgan, who has been brooding over Buddhism for 15 years, writes, even if you achieve a blissful acceptance of the illusory nature of yourself, this perspective may not transform you into a saintly bodhisattva, brimming with love and compassion for all other creatures. Far from it. And this is where the distance between certain humanistic values and Buddhism is very, very apparent. To someone who sees himself and others as unreal, human suffering and death may appear laughably trivial. So think about that for a minute. If it's all an illusion, suffering is an illusion also, and therefore meaningless. Horgan says, this may explain why some Buddhist masters have behaved more like nihilists than saints. Chogyam Tungpa, who helped introduce Tibetan Buddhism to the U.S., according to most sources, was a promiscuous drunk and a bully. He died of alcohol-related illness in 1987. Zen lore celebrates behavior of sages such as Bodhidharma, who is said to have sat in meditation so long that his legs became gangrenous and rotted off. This is at odds with the self-care which we encourage. I'm not saying discard Buddhism. Again, hear that very clearly. But choose pieces mindfully. Explore Buddhism if it calls to you, but do it with respect and responsibility. Refuse to appropriate elements of the religion because they look nice or sound spiritual, or because you can get the great t-shirts and the $12 soap. Use what speaks to you on a meaningful level because you understand it. Use only what you have gained some understanding or appreciation of. Use only what you believe to truly be true for you. Explore the cultural and religious context of every piece before you choose to claim it. Appreciate and practice rather than appropriate and exploit. Buddhism can often seem to be the beautiful and exotic stranger at a UU party. Friendly enough to be invited, different enough to get lots of attention. If you're going to give it the attention, make sure you call it the next day. Amen.
May the light of reason remain with us always. Please rise in body or spirit and join us in singing our closing hymn, number 1009, Meditation on Breathing.
Start with the foundation, breathe in, breathe out. Some of you, what is the melody?
The service is over, but your service to yourself and the world begins anew. Peace, and may it be so. survived. Well done, sir.